Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 451. Thank you for tuning in. I've got an amazing guest this week, but before I get to it, I want to thank all of you who tuned in to both of last week's episodes, but specifically the Friday night bonus episode, because it was a really important one. I talked to a woman called Lisa Simpson, whose son, Richard Risher, was murdered by the LAPD. And she, along with several other mothers of murdered black children and people, grown-ups as well, feel that the deaths of their children have been exploited by certain activists. And having previously had activists on, I felt it equally important to give a platform to people like Lisa, who have their story to tell. So, yeah, thank you all for tuning in. I wanted to mention it here because a lot of you, obviously, if you're expecting a Wednesday episode, might not have noticed a Friday episode, but it's worth going back and listening. But anyway, this week's episode is amazing. I only recorded it last week, but it's a quick turnaround because it's with Benedict Wong, and I've wanted Benedict on for ages. As we discussed, there's been a good few years of us going back and forth, and this episode felt so special. It felt like there were some moments, there were some bits of his story I didn't know at all that are astounding. You may know Benedict Wong from 15 Stories High, from Top Boy, from Annihilation, from Prometheus, from The Martian, but even more likely, you might know him from the Marvel Universe. And he's in the new Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which I couldn't be more hyped for. This looks like exactly my kind of Marvel film. A lot of you will know I love all the Marvel films anyway. Although there was recently one, you know, comic superhero type movie, and it's the first one I've not gone to see in the cinema. Like, I've seen all of them, even like that first Suicide Squad, which I didn't think was great. But anyway, I'm very excited about Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, and I will be straight in the cinema to see it, either this weekend or early next week. And so I jumped on Zoom with Benedict, and the conversation that unfolded blew me away, honestly. You'll hear the reasons, or you'll hear how much of a fan I am of him in the episode, and you'll hear how much guidance and inspiration he's given me, maybe without realising. And you'll hear an amazing man on an amazing journey doing amazing things. I keep wanting to say things he tells you in the episode that you're about to listen to. That's just because I'm hyped about it. I'll shut up. As ever, we're brought to you by speechdevelopmentrecords.com. That's where you can go to buy my vinyl. We've just re-released the limited edition gold print "We May Not Be For You and That's Fine" sunglasses. Those guys always sell out quite quickly. We do a drop like once every 2 years, so grab them while you can. You can also support over on Patreon, patreon.com/ScroobiusPipio, or you can catch me at least 3 times a week over on Twitch. I'm doing loads of good fun things over there. I've just started doing Saturday morning wrestling. It's a long story. There's a character I'd like to introduce you to who will be your new favourite wrestler. And I'm also doing a role play character on a game called Rust on a server that was set up by comedian Limmy, a previous podcast guest. And if that all sounds confusing, don't sweat it, man. Twitch is just a live streaming service. You can go to twitch.tv/ScroobiusPipio, and it's all very simple. But anyway, let's get on with the podcast. This is the legend, Mr. Benedict Wong, on the Distraction Pieces podcast. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. Right, I'm here today with Benedict Wong. How are you, sir?
Very good. It's so good to see you.
It's great to see you. We've been lining this up for a long time, haven't we? And I'm all about the correct timing, so I'm glad we're getting to have a chat.
Honestly, yeah, it was. There was a lot of imposter syndromes, and I'm contractually bound, and we're here now. you know, we've been like Insta buddies, haven't we? And yeah. then they're kind of having a bit of back and forth. And then I was like involved in a lot of work and then it just got waylaid. And it honestly is the perfect timing now to see. And it's great. Thanks.
Mate, I'm so happy to get this email because I know loads of different people who are lucky enough to get to work on Marvel projects, but it also means there's very specific times that you can talk about anything, if you know what I mean, on a podcast and stuff like that. So it's perfect to get an email about Doctor Strange and know that we can have a good old chat. Can you remember what it was I promised I'd give you in exchange for coming on the podcast? It was either a Thou Shalt vine or an Angles vine.
I think it was a pink Thou Shalt vinyl. Yeah.
I've got one here for
was
you
it,
in my hand.
Was it the album? Yeah. Oh, mate.
I've got the album here as well. The album as well. So I've got them both aside. So
honestly,
when we can meet up in person, I'll drop them off to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
So, I mean, we've got an hour, which is amazing. As you know, I've been a fan of you for a long time, big fan of your career. Of course, I want to talk about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, a little project.
Yeah.
But can we kind of start things off by quickly having a quick chat about 15 Stories High? Because that's where you came to my attention. I think it's one of the most underrated shows. And obviously, we sadly lost Sean Locke fairly recently still. So what a show. How was that to work on? How was it at the time? Because it is kind of a cult classic, I guess.
Yeah, it was a time when I was about to give up, you know.
Really?
Look, it all started where I couldn't get a job in Manchester. I moved down to London. I was finding it hard getting gigs. Then there was a time where I got an audition to go back up to Manchester for one line in Phoenix Nights, Peter Kay's Phoenix Nights.
Right.
And I waited there and there's no one in the room. And I waited and waited and it was like an hour and 40 and no one was coming out. So I was having a bit of a hard time with that. And I just had a bit of a network moment, right? So I kind of wrote down on this letter to the casting director saying, you know, good luck with Phoenix Nights. It's a great comedy. But in a way, I think I was writing this to myself, but you know what? I'm better than this. And then I passed that over to the receptionist and said, make sure she gets it. And I walked out and I knew that was it. I was going to give up. So I called John, my then agent, Cumberbatch's agent. I just said, look, that's it, John. I've had enough. I'm done. And, you know, he was like, no, wait a second. There's another script. And it's like, what is it? It's like, it's an illegal immigrant. I said, F off. just like... And that film was Dirty Pretty Things with Stephen Frears. Stephen Knight's first film. Knight
creating that.
Of course you know him.
And what an amazing film as well. I remember the first thing I saw. It wasn't until I worked with Stephen that I realised I went back and saw he'd written that. But I remember that coming out and getting the DVD and it being such a gritty but beautiful story. And it didn't feel like it was, as you say, you no doubt rolled your eyes when they said it's an illegal immigrant.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful story of immigration, of the country, of the different nations that make up this country as such, the hardship, but also the richness, I guess. So that must have been a great one to lure you back in.
Oh, it was amazing, you know, to actually wait and finally be given a role, really.
Yeah.
That's what happened. And then so, you know, I had a lifeline. And then further down the line, it was my friend Peter Serafinowicz was involved in the radio show of 15 Stories High.
Right.
And the character of Errol was from Salford, and so he kind of did an impression of me.
Yeah.
And basically, when it came to series, I just walked through and I met them, and they all just looked at each other and nodded.
and went, here he is.
As I read, yeah.
I love it. I swear Peter's early career was just the usefulness of not having to cast anyone else. Yeah. Peter and James's brother is the creativity in both of them. It was just that ideal thing of, well, Peter can kind of just, particularly on radio, he can play everyone. You don't need a car. So that's amazing that he based it on you and then you get to stumble in on it.
So, you know, thanks to him, you know, that was kind of, again, the lifeline. And I was filming 15 stories and Dirty Pretty Things in tandem at nights. So there was one night where it was just so back to back. I think it was a day night.
Wow.
On both of them.
And what different characters and roles as well.
Yeah, I always vividly remember him kind of going into the makeup chair, and it's for a night shoot. I mean, finished the day, and I think I'd done the day, night, day, ready to do the night. And then Audrey Tautou's looking at me, and I'm just like weeping and crying because I just don't know where I am. And, I think the makeup artist's like, come on, shut up, you'll be all right.
This guy's so method. This is amazing. He's coming in already exhausted and broken.
Yeah, he just wails. that led me to Sean and Mark Nunnally and Martin Treneman and Mark Lamar and Phil Bowker. Do you know what? I didn't really do comedy. I kind of just got, Peter would ask me to do things, and as a mate, we just kind of, go on, I'll have a go. So I've kind of always had this kind of trial up by error kind of approach, because I didn't really go to drama school. I did 2 years at a performing arts course in Salford, and I just joined a cooperative where actors represent each other, and I sort of gave myself that 3 years of kind of, grazing your knees and getting back up and not to be hard on myself. And it kind of just, was my kind of underlining sort of mantra, really, sort of going through. But, back to 15 Stories, it was just one of the most funniest times for me, Bless Sean. I mean, what an absolute shining light of genius there was. And we laughed so much on set. And, there was a time where there was a 20th anniversary that we had. And we had it at home in Manchester, and we did a bit of a Q&A. So I'm glad that we all just got together and took them to this great Chinese restaurant in Manchester called Made In. You want to pop down there? It's not a paid partnership, but it's lovely food. And we just broke bread, and we watched an episode with some diehard fans. And then we went to Peveril on the Peak, lovely pub, and we all had a lovely drink. I knew something was up then, you didn't want to pry, you wasn't. And I think during the time of COVID, I bumped into him intermittently, and it's always lovely to see him. Yeah, so I saw him in Muswell Hill, and he told me, and it was really, it was deeply sad, because you could see that he was going through that, but we had this conversation where it was like, we made this incredible show together, which was, I think it was voted number one in one of like some sort of Guardian kind of all-time favorite shows, and how he was the comedian's comedian and this incredible contribution really kind of got him one of these earthing mats to kind of help kind of break down inflammation, and sent it to him, and we chanced a hug between it really, and that was the last I ever saw of him. And when I found out he passed, it was just, I was constantly just watching all these reruns of different excerpts of what he was doing on Channel 4, and just how his ability to just make people laugh, I said, what's that phrase with the sardines, the seagulls?
The seagulls follow the boat.
Yeah. When the seagulls follow in the boats, because the fishermen will throw something in sardines. Sorry, I forget that. But that correlates to a bit like Sean. You were always just hanging around with him, hoping that you were just going to get another free laugh, for me. And, wonderful times.
It's beautiful. I love it. You touched upon those early days there, and the coming close to quitting acting. And when I was looking through your pre-15 Stories, pre-Pretty Little Things career, there's everything. There's Last of the Summer Wine, there's Pie in the Sky, there's Cracker, there's The Bill. All of these kind of established, almost on-set learning type places. But there's also, you scroll through the character names, they're all very similar, all very... Did you find at that point you were getting just the same roles? You know, you were the, as you said, the immigrant, the... The Asian representation in this small part. How was that in those early days, I guess? Because now we look through your career and there's such a variation. That's one of the things that made it so, highlighted, I guess.
I mean, it's like, it's strange, isn't it? It's like when I think about kind of growing up in Salford and how, like, I never knew that I was any different, you know?
Mm.
And, you know, from infants to juniors, you grow up because children don't see colour, you know?
Yeah.
And then obviously, you know, it's the odd bit of teasing there as you keep going through, like from high school, and then, you know, you kind of learn to build your voice to kind of knock that back and protect yourself a little bit. You know, I was working in, you know, we had the family chip shop and stuff, and it was always like you're lending a hand, but, you know, come 11 o'clock, you never know if you're going to get kind of random racist pot shots. Do you know what I mean? And it's like it's like a whack-a-mole, do you know what I mean? And you've no idea when and when it is. And sometimes you can't hit it with a hammer, you know? You literally you know, your mum kind of go, they know where we live, we don't know where. Just take the, absorb it, and let it, and move on to the next customer. And it's slightly difficult, that, because, I mean, in a way, I had to adhere to that, but... Occasionally, when it got too much, I think me and my brother Henry, we used to have one of those, you know, Chinese supermarket calendars, and we'd lift up the calendar and we'd just punch the wall so fucking hard.
Wow.
Just to release the tension.
Yeah.
And we'd either do that, you know, and sometimes I'd lift it. It's like, oh, my brother's put a bigger dent there. You know, it's like,
I'll go and check in on my brother. He's had a bad day.
All right, have you had one? But, you know, after a while, what was the family business? It's just like, in a way, it's, you know, do you want this business? It's like, I'm all right. I've done my national service to catering and I'm ready to go out and see what's out there, you know? And also never really having much of a weekend. So there were certain, you know, areas in my life that I've never explored. So I kind of, sorry, it's quite long-winded here, but just kind of, I suddenly found myself learning about acting. But yeah, I was always me. I was always someone from Salford and proud hanging out in Manchester and going to the Fringe Theatre green room where I would collect tickets and watch incredible touring shows with Steve from the Lighting Box, who would circle all these amazing touring shows. And the thing about Fringe Theatre, you know, it's like the word fringe, you are on the cusp. And really, it's those people that really, really want to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And you see those performances and, you know, I absorbed so much of things that I'd never really seen.
Yeah.
And contemporary dance, you know, kind of like the maids in Spanish and just kind of, you know, Ken Campbell was there and John Hegley and kind of, you know, an unknown Quentin Tarantino was introducing his film Reservoir Dogs at the Corner House, you know, around the corner. And it was just like, it was a foundation for me for learning. And I always talk about Judith Starmer, who was like the house manager at the Library Theatre. And, you know, she'd kind of go, have you seen it yet? Like the show that was on. I said, no. So see me hanging around. It's like, go on, get in. And, you know, I just get a chance to watch culture for free, you know, and that's how I grew.
Yeah.
But then, and then I was excited to join a cooperative. And then the beginnings of that, that's when I started to I actually didn't know how, because I knew me as me, you know, and whatever the business started just seeing it was a race as opposed to whatever the content of the character, you know?
Yeah.
And, only through the patterns just started kind of like, did it start? You're playing a waiter and then you think you're doing well playing a manager on an X role isn't like, you know, a progression, do you know what I mean? Of like, you know, that's you just kind of like what the business is viewing you as. And you were just looking for the breaks and the gatekeepers weren't giving it you. And, you know, for a while I was really, really lost. And
It's a mad way. I relate in a weird way because just recently in my kind of acting journey, I've got a stammer. I don't have my stammer when I'm playing
characters, because if the character isn't meant to, I get it under control. Yeah. But I've really wanted to put forward some auditions and stuff, stammering. But as you say, it's what people see. I don't want the casting director to then see me as the stammering guy. Do you know what I mean? I want that to be an option and a thing.
Yeah.
But that's something that I can at least have some control of. Mm. You, at that time, in that situation, you can't have control of what they see as you walk in the room or on your profile or whatever else. So, yeah, that can't have been an easy one to kind of go, I know the depth and variation within me.
Yeah.
But you're just seeing, as you say, a waiter and then a manager and so on and so forth.
Your perception of that, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was tough. It was tough. And so I guess within that, the gate opened through, you know, honestly, through my mates, you know, that kind of all of a sudden they played a version of me. And that kind of was a lifeline, really, as a role. Yeah.
I want to come back to a lot of these early points in the career as well, but I also don't want to annoy any of the wonderful Marvel fans who are tuning in to hear about this journey. So, and again, I'm a massive Marvel fan, as we've discussed as well.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about that a little bit. Can you talk to me a little bit about that initial kind of casting in Doctor Strange of your character? How was that? How did it come about? How was that to get? Because it's a big deal, particularly at that point. It was just becoming easily the biggest franchise in film history, really. So, yeah, how was that to kind of to be introduced into that universe, and then we'll get into everything that's come since?
For the best part of like 7 years up to now, I mean, I've only just got an agent now the last 3 weeks, but for 7 years I've been representing myself.
That's astounding.
This is kind of...
That's mind-blowing, yeah.
Here at One and Only Management, it got to a point where, you know, my findings really with, I'm loyal. You know, I was with a cooperative for 3 years, London agent for 10, another London agent for 7. And then, you know, just kind of what I knew was, they're not going to push diversity for the sake of their own personal gravy train. Mm-hmm. So that was it.
Yeah.
And I kind of had to accept that, you know, there was no resentment in that. It's kind of gone, oh, okay, all right, well, that's the deal. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
And there was a point where, you know, a role was written for us. This, you know, when the person answering the phone was running my career by this time. And you know, they said I wasn't available, anyway, blah, blah, blah. We kind of got to a crunch meeting. It's like, come on, Benny, suck it up and see. Let's get on with this. And I just brought a present for a baby. And then I said, I haven't found an agent in order to leave you, so you have my loyalty. I said, I'm just going to back away. And so I just left in a kind of Kurosawa sort of way.
Yes.
You have my loyalty. And so I walked out the door. And I was like, that was it. I don't know what's going to happen. Cut to, you then go into a directory where the spotlight, where people contact them, you get a text.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, I was up for 2 plays. One was about Ai Weiwei and one was Chimerica, and they overlapped by a week. And this time I just didn't care anymore. I was just like, I got both the plays, both leads. And, right. And both of them saying, come do ours. And I said, I'm going to do both, and you're both going to have to work it out. And they're like, what the, who the fuck is this? And I said, look, you're going to both going to have to work it out, because if you don't, I'm going to have to choose. And I don't want to choose.
Yeah.
They moved the dates. I had my own repertory theatre. And then it's just like, oh, wow. And kind of sort of, instead of like representing 20 actors as I did in the cooperative, I'm just here just representing myself and kind of asking fairly what I want. You know, it wasn't a time to be a diva.
Yeah.
But like, you know, from then on in, I felt like the artist that I wanted to be, you know.
I
played Ai Weiwei. It was the first ever live stream show. We did Chimerica. Lucy Kirkwood's an amazing writer.
Yeah.
And it garnered 5 Olivier Awards. And it was like, okay, well, this is the springboard now for me to be the actor who I really want to be, you know, having kind of allowed to be kind of, you know, moving around in the wind, you know. And sorry, cut back to I'm doing The Martian, and
yes,
and I'm working with Chiwetel Ejiofor, former mate from Dirty Pretty Things.
Yeah,
I saw him say, "What are you up to next?" He's doing Doctor Strange, and then go on the internet, and then my jaw drops because out from the side pops this character called Wong, and I just no idea that there was a Asian character. So next day I go up to him and said, mate, we're going to do this petition. It's called Wong for Wong. And then you sign it and then Cumberbatch signs it. And he's like, no. I've jumped through many rings of fire for this. So I was like, okay, so this is out. I had no idea to get in touch with these people, you know. And so finished the film. I'm on the second season of Marco Polo and I'm filming in Budapest. I get this email. We'd like you to audition for the character of Lee. So I was like, oh, yeah. And went on tape. I was in Slovakia, did a few tweaks. By the time I was in Malaysia, you know, I got the call from Sarah Finn. And she said, you know, congratulations. Well done. You're going to have a great time. And so I text Chiwetel. I said, mate, I'm going to have to borrow your lawyer. And he was like, Wong for Wong, question mark? And I went, Wong is Wong. So,
I love it.
So his lawyer, so it's my friend now who happens to be my lawyer. And that's how I got the Marvel gig.
That's so amazing. And I love those. I've only got to sit in the room with Sarah Finn once, but it was amazing. But I love when those ones come through because there's always an air of mystery. You're never quite sure, or often, what film it is, what character it is. There's often a level of, we're going to have to change names and cover things up. And then you go, all right, well, let's have a go.
I think my password for them to find my audition piece was marvellous. I thought I was being super original there, but I'm sure everyone's done it.
Amazing. I've had numerous ones where, again, as a big Marvel fan, I go and see them all. I've been sitting in this cinema and then suddenly I go, oh, shit, that's what I auditioned for. You know, as the scene starts to come on screen, it's like, oh, man, I didn't know. I never knew what that was until I found out. So how was it when that kind of started happening then? Because, as said, it hadn't really occurred to me, but you're in the biggest franchise in the world, but you're with two mates, essentially. You're with Benedict and you're with Chiwetel. And that must have been the perfect introduction, right, to such a huge production, but such familiarity.
It was, but also, you know, I kind of just finished season two of Marco Polo, dumped me bags and went pretty much straight on set.
Wow.
I was like, I was a little bit overwhelmed by it all, to be honest. I mean, I was like floundering lines-wise. I don't know, it was a mixture of jet lag, I don't know, nerves, but I think they ended up sending me home. That's like, you know, just like, oh God, this... I've just entered into another imposter syndrome again, you know. And I was like, but I steeled myself. And I think the next day I was okay. But it was a great beginning, you know. I always remember about, you know, I talk about this a lot, you know, about the source material and how much we're really wanting to move away from that kind of, you know, servile kind of tea servant kind of, librarian to someone who just, you know, takes no shit, midfield general.
Yeah, 100%. Midfield general is perfect description.
Yeah, yeah. And so I spoke to Kevin Feige and Stephen Brossard and it was like, no. Yeah, absolutely right. That's what we're doing. And I just thought, okay, well, this is like, could be the beginnings of something quite beautiful, you know? And I'm just like... Yeah, every time either we'll do additional photography, you know, Kevin will pop in and then he'll surprise me that I'm in Avengers and, you know, just as a Marvel fan.
In Infinity War and Endgame, that's then another step up. Again, you've gone on to this big thing, but it's with familiarity. You're then in, huge films. How is that? Again, you say you'd get surprised with it by Kevin. Just, here you go. Here's what you're in now.
Yeah. No, it was just, it's overwhelming, you know. I never discard that, you know, I'm this lad from Salford that's kind of like, you know, and I'm I blink, and we talk about time travel. I blink with the moments of where I've been. I blink collecting tickets and, you know, sweeping the floors at the green rooms. It's now a bar called Gorilla, and I just always pop in there every now and then because I always remember the placing where I was. It's almost like, you know when you walk around the streets where you know, and you just feel like you can see this kind of ghost trail of yourself being somewhere around everywhere, or that's what I have. And it's just like, you used to get this free lager, and I just used to stand there by the bar and just sup this lager and having watched this show. It's just like all of this sort of takes me back, and it's just like to be kind of like we're in Atlanta and, you know, all running together with kind of that all converged all together with all these amazing kind of characters, because it just culminated into that movie, didn't it?
Yeah.
That massive chapter. It was great to be a part of, you know.
I love that you speak in there of those moments of kind of drifting through memories in the past, but in reality. I literally had it last week. I go to a cinema near me, and I'd got there early, and I thought, right, I'm going to go for a walk. And I found myself down this little side road where I'd forgotten an ex of mine, like used to live when I was 17 or 18, and had no car then, so it was always on foot. And walking around there, I must have looked like a weirdo, because I'm a 6'4" guy with a big beard now, just strolling about this estate, essentially. But it was exactly that. It was these moments of, oh, man, this feels like a different lifetime. And you must have so many of those moments now because of the speed of the film industry. Yeah. You don't get to maybe take it in at the time when you're filming or when you're making these things. So maybe when you either return somewhere, or even if it comes on TV, you get to have a, oh, wow, that was a thing that happened. Do you ever get a time to kind of look round in the moment, you know, and take it in, and take in where you are and what you're achieving?
I do. I mean, you know, that moments like this, talking to you now, it's just like these reflective moments of just like, I just feel so super blessed on this kind of, it is the journey, you know. I kind of sort of mentor a few people, and we always talk about the journey, you know. It is like this kind of, you know, I don't really have many kind of role models to look up to in terms of Asian role models. And I talk about this book, The Tao of Jeet Kune Do, that Bruce Lee wrote. And there's some lovely little kind of segments there that kind of correlate to, you know, teachings for yourself as an actor, really. And kind of the style of Jeet Kune Do is that he didn't just stick to one form of martial art. He just gleaned off all of it, you know. And taking that into account, you know, in terms of your, like, the alchemy of acting, you know, it's just like harnessing the little nuggets that you want, you know.
Yes.
And that all of this is, when I talk to other fellow mentees, I don't give them, like, this is a how-to. Just sort of equip them for their journey, you know?
Yeah.
So talk about a lot about mental health, because, I mean, that's clearly like the one. I think anyone that's always chasing their dream, you know, it's always have a little, you know, side of mental health, you know, of kind of just of a check-in with yourself, you know, be it a meditation or whatever kind of a CBT app or something, just to kind of, you know, have a check-in, really, you know, because it can be tough.
It can be exhausting and relentless. Yeah. You touched upon the kind of the taking bits from everywhere and the variation of the journey, and the variation of your career has always been hugely inspirational to me. It's certainly something I aspire to, from comedy to drama to big blockbusters. And you probably don't realise, but you've been a massive help to me as I've moved into acting, where you've recommended a book here or there, or a course or a method. And it's probably only taken you a second on an Instagram message, but I've then devoured that book. And kind of exactly as you say, it came to mind because there was a David Mamet one, I think, you recommended.
Yeah.
And it was exactly what you were saying there. I remember reading all of it and some of it going, no, fuck that.
Yeah,
I don't agree with this guy. Exactly. That's bollocks. Yeah. And other bits going, this is perfect. This is absolute genius. And it's been about that feeding of the mind and the approach.
Yeah,
that's been a beautiful thing. So yeah, I want to quickly take a pause to thank you for that, because again, it's probably been a second thought at times, but it's really helped kind of plan things out on my path that I'm still going along.
I remember that chat. I remember that chat. We were kind of into the back and forth thing. Was that when you were in Vancouver? Were you in Vancouver at that time?
Yeah. I was in Vancouver, and it was, and again, all those things, particularly hearing you speak of not going to drama school, but kind of continuing to learn along the way. Again, it's something I massively relate to, because I got all my early roles, and I'd always get the feedback that the reason I got it was because I'm not a drama school kid. I've not got these things. But then equally, I'm not one to rest on my laurels. It's why I would start hitting you up. I hit up Paddy Considine, Tom Hardy, Stephen Graham, a load of these amazing people I've been lucky enough to get in contact with, and kind of say, look, wicked, how lovely that I'm getting opportunities because of a rawness. But I'm not arrogant enough to think, well, I'll do a whole career of just, you know, there's improvements to be made at every turn. So it's about finding that. How have you kind of kept that hunger, I guess, to keep improving and to keep bettering yourself as an artist?
I think it was about like 10 years ago. I just had a bit of a mini moment of kind of, what the fuck am I doing? You know, and just again, it was a check-in and readdress. And, you know, for a while, like, just kind of thought, you know, I just need to refresh this and take a course. And I found myself getting into like a Meisner course at a place called the Actors Temple. And I don't know if it's, I'm not sure if it's there anymore. It's like looking into the eyes of someone and engaging with the trust and being in this back and forth repetition moment. And there were times you were playing, you know, loads of, you know, you're either angry, happy or sad. And there were moments I loved that course that I did. And it was only about 6 or 7 people, in contact with a few of them, but it was a really intense time with each other. And we all, like, it's a bit of like the old we few, we happy few, you know, we band of Meisners. We kind of, we went there with each other, actually. It was amazing. But I kind of, I just needed to keep striving, you know, to keep crafting, you know. I probably, you know, I've done it for 30 years. Don't even say that I'm not a finished article. I'm continuing, you know, but I guess I've kind of got, what we always have is this unspoken body of work, this experience that's behind us, really. I think we can just, I don't know, it's there. It's there, but it's not there. It's the nothingness in the vase. You know what I mean? Kind of like, I'm still the student. Still the student. Yeah.
I love it. Well, I mean, you spoke of those early roles, of the lack of variation, and you've spoken of a lack of role models and inspiration over the years. How was it to be part of Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings? Because that was, again, another one. I always go and see these at my local IMAX, and I went in and it was amazing. But this was a huge, fully Asian-led Marvel blockbuster. And again, I talked about this when I was discussing a Black Panther with someone. When Black Panther first came out, I was a bit like, this is dope, but are we now leaning on representation as a marketing tool? I then went to see it, and what hit me was, because again, growing up, all the black mates of mine and people of all races did have amazing people to look up to throughout history. But what got me in this cinema, where it really clicked, was, and the area I live in, it's not the nicest of areas. There has been history of racism. This is where a lot of EDL stuff started off, and BNP stuff and all this kind of thing. And I watched as the credits ran, as a couple of young white kids were dancing and in heaven at Black Panther. And I realized, as well as the representation for young black kids, it's important for young white kids to see many different races up on that screen as their heroes, rather than just the white hero, the brown villain as such, as was tradition for so many years. So I guess, how was that to be part of, and how was that to know you're giving so many kids new heroes, new people to look up to and new role models. It's all to play for.
Absolutely. You know, you talk about this, it's again, when we talk about opportunity, you know, to be given a platform on that stage with that MCU sort of backing, you know, that's like, you know, you're throwing everything at it. But that also when you've got kind of got that Asian ensemble with, and it's pretty much all the way through from editing and costume set, set design, and Daniel Destin Cretton is amazing. There's a inner level of that speaking out that it's like, this is our shot now to just show them what we do. This is what we do. And I don't know, there's just an even, just an extra oomph of passion that's going in there, you know? And the outcome of that, you know, like Legends of Tony Leung and Michelle Yeoh, and then some young guns as well, and Simu has done such an incredible job. And even the soundtrack as well is Asian, 88 Rising, and all these young Asian hip-hop artists as a representation of the culture as well. To see it on the screen, this is us doing better. And I know when I get those kind of texts of fellow Asians, they just feel so fucking proud to be a part, you know, to see it, to be represented like that, you know. And you just know that you're on the right track, and you just know that how much it matters, you know.
Yeah.
It's so long may it continue, you know. I mean, there's obviously this Everything Everywhere and All at Once with the Daniels as well. It's like an ABC as well, which is Destin's next thing. It's so important, and you know, it's something that I've got to get my hands stuck in and bring that here as well, as a kind of, you know, a British East and Southeast Asian kind of production, really. So I need to crack on with that.
Completely. And you bang on, Everything Everywhere All at Once is one of the most hyped films, new releases of the year at the moment. But another one is obviously Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. So bringing us fully up to date on your Marvel journey.
Yeah.
What can you talk about this film? Because obviously it plays with time and space and all these things. The trailer looks absolutely astounding. The preview for everything just looks amazing. And what the first Doctor Strange film did, I think, is it pushed the Marvel Universe in these new interesting directions. It wasn't an Iron Man, a Captain America, and so on and so forth. It was going in more cerebral areas, in more magical areas.
Yeah.
And this seems to be going, taking that and running with it. So, yeah, how was it? How is it? Obviously, it's been a long time coming as well. It's been a long production. So, yeah. How do you feel about it all now? Where are you?
Thanks. Exhausted. I kind of want to weep now. It's been a tough slog. It's been long. And but you know, with it kind of sort of connects with WandaVision and No Way Home, and you know, that crack from the casting of the spell that cracks through these parallel realities. It's, you know, it allows us to introduce new characters, you know, after sort of that, the closing of that phase three. And you know, it's the making of it was tough, you know. I mean, you know, we were all dealing with COVID at the time, a lot of restrictions, you know. It was very hard on the crew. You know, I talk about this, like sometimes it was like the madness of the multi-schedule, because you were like literally like, oh, someone's gone down, you're filming this tomorrow. It's like, oh shit, that was supposed to be next week, now it's tomorrow now. And it's like, you know, so you were kind of in a real sort of, you know, I didn't know I had a quantum brain. Do you know what I mean? But it's almost like I'm going, okay, right, we're probably doing potentially three different scenes at the same time tomorrow, and I'll find out.
Don't fall too in love with the call sheet or the schedule, because it's all liable to change.
Yeah, well, it's been, again, you know, to get Sam Raimi has been such a masterstroke, you know. It's just, we to have him from Evil Dead, Spider-Man movies, and now he's doing this. It's just,
yeah.
I don't know. You know, I feel like I've jumped into all these. I feel like a competition winner jumping into all these fanzines. You know what I mean? All these magazines. Like, okay, now you're going to be doing this, and it's just like, it's just such a ride for me. It's almost like you. It's always great when you're surrounded by great people, you know, because like they help your job. And I think that's what I learned about playing Kublai Khan. You know what I mean? He always surrounded himself with the people that he couldn't do. You know, all the CEOs do anything that you can't do. You know, get someone that can do it better. Anything that you can't do better, you know, get someone else to fill that role. It's like this delegation, but it's almost like, I think that's what you get with these Marvel studios. You know, the process of them bringing people in, you know, you're surrounded by a lot of kind of just talented people, you know. And I look at these trailers, I just like flabbergasted sometimes, like, shit, we made this. And it's like, you know, and then the way it ramps up, they know that, you know, they're the king of the teasers. Yeah. And so it's exciting. Yeah.
Well, speaking of working with legends and whatnot, we need to spend a little moment on Ridley Scott, because Prometheus and, like you touched upon, The Martian earlier, and going to see both of those, I had moments of fucking hell, Errol's in space. This is mad. This is insane. How do these worlds come together? How's
come and clean your hands on me spacesuit.
Yeah, exactly. So how was that to work with those people? I know we're limited on time, but I put Alex Garland in that list as well.
Totally.
I think he's absolutely a modern great, in my opinion. So
isn't he? Yeah.
Working with people like this on these sci-fi things, which it feels like sci-fi kind of is the one area I've not done much of. The show I did with NBC was sci-fi, but more your X-Files type sci-fi than your Star Wars type sci-fi. So how is it to work with these icons in these dreamlike worlds? The Martian and Prometheus and Annihilation all are such dream spaces, and it must be a mad thing to kind of to step into.
And with that, and Sunshine as well, with Danny Boyle, which Alex wrote Sunshine.
And I mean,
God, Moon with Duncan Jones. You know what? When you talk about that, waiting for an hour and 40 minutes, I waited for an hour and 40 minutes at Phoenix Nights. I waited an hour and 40 minutes to go on tape for Ridley. But, you know, I kind of felt I've been waiting for 20 years. So, like, what's another hour and 40? And it was like one of the, it was great because you just saw loads of, you know, known actors in this room, like really pissed off, kind of going like, I'm off. And I was just like, no, you've got to stay the course for this guy.
Mate, when I did Venom 2, and again, as a massive Marvel nerd and a Venom nerd specifically, I've got a framed issue one up there. I had my first day on set and we didn't end up getting to my scene, and they came really apologetic to say, I'm sorry, you've not get to get your scene. And I was like, I get to come back for another day, because I was there watching. I wasn't waiting in my trailer. I was lingering and watching and taking it all in. I was like, take as long as you want to get to my scene, mate. If I get to keep coming here and being part of it and learning from everyone, then I'm all over that. And I can completely see that with Ridley Scott, the buzz of getting to be there. It's like, I'll wait as long as you need me to wait. Let's lose all these angry people and it'll just be me and you, Ridley. Let's do
it. And then you kind of, all the design, everything, you see him drawing stuff. So, you know, I used to go to art school and he'd always storyboard, and just the amazing drawings he'd do. Such a lovely guy. And I remember being on the, like, they literally built this hydraulic spaceship on hydraulics, and then we're just climbing onto the spaceship and your boots hit this kind of metal grill that you hear from Alien, and it's like, you know, spine chilling. And it's, there was one point I was like, we were flying the spaceship, and it was like going on for about 15 minutes, and I was like, this is it. You lose yourself within this, and it's such a wonderful time. And then I always remember watching because I've Blade Runner, obviously one of my favorite films, watching that on IMAX, and Ridley was there. I walked up the stairs and there he was right at the top, and I just gave him a massive hug, and it was like, oh, to watch something that you're so bang into, and they're kind of, you know, so know them, and you know, it's amazing, mate. I really love it.
I love it. Well, to kind of wrap things up, there's, as said, there's so much we could have talked about. There's, as you can tell, I've yeah. taken in a lot of your career, and I've been learning along the way. But I want to quickly talk about Top Boy, because I think it's as good as any drama that's ever come out of the UK. I think it's given us astounding new talents in Kano and Jasmine Jobson and loads of others. Yeah. On the directing front, Jan and
Jan Dimash, just
all sorts of people. How was that to be part of, kind of at the start, and to be, again, it shows the variation of your career, from comedies to this real gritty British drama alongside, as said, these big Hollywood productions. How was that to be part of, and to play that intimidating character?
Yeah, that kind of the link of the one of the DOPs, Tat Ratcliffe, did second season of 15 Stories High, and right. Jan watched 15 Stories High and took Tat.
Look at this, full over. Circle. What are the chances? Yeah, yeah.
I know. And yeah, that's it. When did I meet? And yeah, I just came on board, really. Something that I hadn't seen before.
Riz Ahmed used to rave about Jan to me, and yeah, he's just clearly,
he's great.
Yeah,
he's so good.
Yeah,
and yeah, Top Boy. Just we just haven't seen anything quite like this, have we? Really?
No.
And it's refreshing. And that is it. When we look, kind of, we're looking for the authentic voice. You know, again, platform opportunity. When it's rarely been seen, people are kind of going, fuck, what is this?
Yeah.
Because it's so fresh. And that is it. It's people are crying out there to be on that stage.
In the gap between the original series and the return of Top Boy, I did a tweet saying, why hasn't the UK ever had its Sopranos or its Wire or its Gomorrah or all these other amazing shows? Yeah. And the one response I got that was right was Top Boy. And I was like, you're fucking right. That's bang on. That is our version of all of these. It's that true voice of those worlds. And yeah, I think they've done amazing things with it. Well, I mean, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. To wrap things up, I kind of want to ask what's ahead or what's next for you.
Well, yeah, the happy ending to the kind of one and only management is that I've now got an agent. Because it's all got a bit too much.
Kind of. It only took working in the Marvel Universe with Ridley Scott and Alex Garland for you to go, I probably need someone to help take over this.
I'm now doing the three-body problem.
With John Bradley, right? I love John. He's an amazing... Again, another Manchester, another guy from your neck of the woods, right?
So, being off Vice and Woo, so that's a new series for Netflix. I'm sort of midway through that, and I've got a bit of a mini hiatus to kind of pop around and represent the Doctor Strange. So that's what I'm doing. Three body problem.
I love it. Well, I can't wait for that. And I appreciate you taking the time, man. Thank you very much for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, mate. I'm so glad as well. And look, I first came across you with Dan the Sack and Scroobius Pip, and just some of the most incredible tunes that you've made, mate. I'm always playing them to everyone. See it.
Well, I appreciate that, man.
To get back together again. come on. I know.
It's one of the things I've said a few times about anyone in the arts is you never know who's watching and listening. Because I said, I've been watching your career for so long. Yeah. Simon Pegg and Nick Frost come to mind. When they played one of our songs on Six Music, it was like, I've got all of your stuff on my DVD shelf, along with all of Benny's stuff on my DVD shelf. It's like, it's mad where these things cross over. So I hope there's a project in the future where our paths can cross and we can work together.
I'd love that.
Well, lovely, man. Yeah. Thank you very much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
You too. I'll speak to you soon.
Keep safe, mate.
All right, take care.
I'll see you soon.
Bye. Bye.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. I told you it was a good one. I did tell you, didn't I? When he started talking about the periods of not having a manager and the hustle and the ways he got these gigs, the ways things happened, the drive he had, the focus, everything, it blew me away. And talking about those early just going to see all the plays and films and catching like Tarantino presenting Reservoir Dogs in his local cinema. Man, so many good stories and good bits I didn't know about and didn't expect. And it got quite emotional quite early. As he was talking about Sean Locke, it was deep. It was personal, but he was so eloquent and tender with his words. I really hope you enjoyed that one. And I hope we all go and enjoy Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, because I'm well up for it. I'm well up for it. If you haven't seen 15 Stories High, it's on iPlayer again now. Can't recommend it enough. It's bloody amazing. But yeah, I really enjoyed that episode, man. There were some really deep and inspirational moments, and there were some genuine laughs. And that's, as I said, this is someone I've watched for years, but also had some back and forth over the last few years. So it was great to actually be able to talk kind of face to face. So I hope you enjoyed that. I'll be back next week, as ever. Until then, catch me on Twitch, twitch.tv/ScroobiusPipio. Catch me on the socials. In fact, let's plug some stuff. We've got superhero fans in here. Catch me in Venom, Let There Be Carnage, out now on demand. Catch me in Taboo on Netflix. Yeah, all the good stuff. Until next week, stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1, only from Rust-Oleum.